I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I've been looking forward to this hour for some time because this is the hour when we get our holiday shopping done. I'm not kidding you. Not only do we get our shopping done, but we're going to be able to get books for people we love in our lives who will find that you picked just the right book for him or her, because we have with us this hour the wonderful Nancy Pearl, who does most of my shopping, along with Daniel Gold. And I go to both of them and say, what should so-and-so read? What should so-and-so read? And they always give me great suggestions. And then I buy the books, and there goes the shopping. It's great. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for Nancy and for Daniel. Nancy, of course, has been with us many times. She did the wonderful Book Lust series. She has written a novel herself. She is a commentator about books on NPR's Morning Edition and also on affiliate stations in Seattle and other places in the country. Her recommendations are wonderful. She's traveled all over the world talking to libraries, talking to book lovers. And her, I can't believe it was this long ago, her release of her first book, Lust, was in 2003. No, I've known her all those years now. That's amazing. Nancy, hello. It's been a while.
Oh, hello. Hi. It has. Oh, Kathleen, I'm so happy to be on the show with Daniel again.
I know. We're going to have so much fun. Daniel joins us, of course, pretty regularly. He's Milwaukee's wonderful bookseller, Boswell Books. They do so much for the written word, and he brings in so many authors. He's just a real treasure in this community. He's the owner of Boswell Book Company on Downer Avenue here in Milwaukee. Was recently named one of three judges for the 2016 Story Prize, which is awarded annually for the best short story collection in English. And he's a good buddy of ours and brought all these books in and all his enthusiasm. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's an honor to be with both of you.
Yeah, great to have you here. And we're going to have a list. Both Daniel and Nancy, we asked to write their favorite books of 2016. They have done so. We're going to talk about each of them. And then they can make recommendations for you. You know, Uncle Daniel O'Leary likes books about Irish history, but historical fiction, you know, that kind of thing. Both of these people just say, oh, of course, Uncle Daniel should be reading whatever, and he comes up with a great suggestion, or she does, so that's really good. Nancy, let's start with you, and, you know, I read your first suggestion, and I immediately said I need to get this book, and what I thought I would do this year was have you always pick books for my husband, and I thought I'd have my husband and the oldest boy read this book, so I got two copies, and then they could have their own little book club. So it's number one on your list, and it's Moonglow.
Yes, this is Michael Chabon's newest book and his newest novel. And I have to say, when I started reading this book, I was just so taken with it. And I kept thinking, the sentence that kept popping into my head is, this is the book that Michael Chabon was born to write.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I've been a fan of his books since the very beginning and have watched his development. I love the Yiddish Policeman's Union very, very much. That was my favorite before I read Moonglow. But there's so many things to say about Moonglow, but basically it's the story of a young man named Michael Chabon who is learning from his grandfather the story of his grandparents' lives. His grandfather is someone who never talked very much, is now dying, and whether it's the drugs that they've given him to ease the pain or what, he's finally started telling his grandson the story of his life. It is fiction, though, which is very interesting, because when I finished it, I thought to myself, how much of this is really true? And, of course, everything is true, because that's what fiction is. It makes truth out of whatever. But how much of it is really from Michael's life, I think we won't really know that. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested what Daniel thought
of this. He brought it with, and you bought it for your sister?
Bought it this week for my sister. I didn't get an advance copy, so I bought my copy, which happens. You know, we have about 18 people on staff, and you know, you don't want to be the boss who says, I get all the good things.
Right.
Here
right.
are the dregs for you. And I have also been a longtime Michael Chabon fan. I can say that I bought The Mysteries of Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. And I bought it at the Squirrel Hill Bookshop, a little signed copy. I had never met him. And I would watch. I loved Wonder Boys. And it actually led me to going back. Those two novels led me going. I started visiting Pittsburgh like once a year for like 5 years because I just became completely obsessed with the place, because he brings place to
Daniel.
Such life.
Yes.
You know, I think my top book previously was Cavalier and Clay. And and I feel like this is a good companion. It seems like it's a good companion in Cavalier and Clay. It's kind of back to kind of a little more historical World War II kind of things.
Right. I had the opportunity to interview him in front of a big audience. And I said to him that one of the books that Moonglow reminded me a little bit of, especially in the World War II sections, was Neal Stephenson's Cryptonomicon, which is a totally different kind of book, but I thought dealt with the war issues in the same way. And Michael said, that's one of my favorite books, which I thought was so interesting, because it's nothing like Cryptonomicon at all. But it shares a certain, you know, if this were a French radio station, I could say, you know, shares a certain je ne sais quoi with it. But I'm not sure. It just reminded me at that moment of that book.
Isn't it funny, though, when you read certain books, you know, you can pull out these connections that you would never dream were the relations between the books. You know,
yes.
You say, you know... I was reading two books recently that are on my list, and they couldn't be more different, but they're about slavery, but they also have this episodic quality. Sometimes you find that, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about narrators who are the author and not the author. I thought of Miriam Taves, All My Puny Sorrows.
Right.
I thought of Jonathan Safran Foer's done that sort of in some of his books. And, you know, it's been a while, but I feel like the first novel had a Jonathan Safran Foer character in the book.
So, yes, know. I think, that's the one where he went to Europe with his grandfather, I think.
Oh, look, more comparison. So,
you
grandfather novels.
You guys need to sit at a coffee shop in Milwaukee and talk for a few days. This is great.
Oh, I don't mind flying out to Seattle.
That'd be okay, too.
No, Daniel, you have to bring me to Seattle. You have to ask my publicist to bring me when the book is published.
Which
in
is
September.
Happening in September, is
okay.
it?
In okay. September.
Oh, by all means, you have to come here, Nancy.
Ooh, conversation with Kathleen Dunn, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Last time.
Last time we did it at the museum.
Yes, we did at the Art Museum.
It was wonderful.
Time. All right, we'll do it again. Good.
Okay.
All right, you're on. We're on. Daniel, The Underground Railroad, the fiction champion, you call it.
Well, I would say that on two levels. For our store, I don't think maybe for a lot of independent bookstores, it's definitely we're selling 2 to 3 times as many copies of Underground Railroad as everything else.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
There's a part of me that sometimes when a book explodes like this, you think, oh, it doesn't need me anymore. But on the other hand, I thought, I just need to know. Like, sometimes you want to say, what is it about the book? And, of course, it started as an Oprah pick, and it won the National Book Award. But not every award. And then the National Book Award, in particular, is very touch and go. We forget when awards sell books well. Like, for the last few years, the Man Booker Prize has been working. But there have been Man Booker Prize bombs. It needs to be the book plus the award. It's obviously tapping into a consciousness about race. There have been a number of books this year that have been part of that conversation. I wanted to read it because I read The Intuitionist. I've not really finished his other books before. And, you know, just once again, life got in the way. We don't host him. Another bookseller wants the galley. Right. I give the book away. I get the book and then I give it to someone as a gift. But this was, you know, it's also showing up on just about every best of list. Mm-hmm. It's almost more conspicuous when it's not on a best of list, which the one I spotted was it's not in the top 20 for Entertainment Weekly. And so I thought that was more interesting because it was on everybody else's best of list. So it's, you know, it's a historical novel. He has the speculative element of it's light spec because the speculative element is when Cora, the slave, runs away from the plantation, she gets on an actual railroad. And as as she makes these stops, she comes into these different states that have structured their societies differently, sometimes seemingly okay for black people and sometimes horrifying for black people. But even the seemingly okay ones turn out to be horrifying as well. It's got a Gulliver's Travels feel about it. I've heard that mentioned a few times. Right. And it really, sometimes you read the book and go, why were people saying this? But I completely saw it. and some people haven't loved the ending so much. I loved the ending. I thought it made perfect sense in terms of the continuing journey. It's a cool, as I say, Whitehead is a cool writer. He's not a warm writer.
Right,
so
right.
If there was any, you're a little removed from Cora.
I read a little description of each of your recommendations. It's as though at this real railroad, it's as though the hero went through, as he or she ran north, each state was a different state of American possibility.
Oh, that's
wonderful. I like that description of it.
Much better than I could
great.
Say.
No. What you said was terrific. Have you read it, Nancy?
Yeah, I have. And I was really glad Daniel mentioned The Intuitionist, which was Colson Whitehead's first novel and remains one of my all-time favorite books. I think if I were
really?
To do my 25 favorite books, that would certainly be on the list. It's about, and I think it's about race. All of his books deal with race in one way or another. And this one, The Intuitionist, about a young African-American woman who's an elevator inspector in Colson's fantastic world. It's not the kind of elevator inspector that we normally think of. So Underground Railroad, I thought was, I think one of the reasons it's so popular is that it's very timely in a way, even though it's a historical novel. I think there's, as there should be, a lot of discussion about race in our country. And this is a book that deals, I think this is a book that helps you talk about it with a group of people in a way that seems less personal to yourself. I always find talking about a book that's on a difficult topic is much easier than just talking about that difficult topic.
Yeah. We should probably resurrect a book club and do at least a few books a year and have discussions. That's a good idea. We did it once a while ago and we let it go. Both of you, and I have a chance to read very little fiction, as you both know, because of the nature of the job, but I was delighted to see, and I just think this is an incredible work. Would that all investigative journalism be, I know you can't devote as much time as Matthew did, but this Evicted book is really an important book of this year, Matthew Desmond, and it's based in Milwaukee, and it is, and I know that it was going to be on your list too, but you saw it on Nancy's and said, well, I won't put it on mine then, so I have room for something else, but you both thought.
Daniel, not fair.
No, completely fair. I ceded.
I would have ceded first.
Oh, I assure you, that's not the only book in your list that I love.
Yeah.
So.
But good.
You both thought pretty highly of this book, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Nancy, go first.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, no. Oh, I was just going to say that I really tend to always seek out books of investigative journalism. I think that in the right hands, you learn so much and you experience so much. And I think that Matthew Desmond's book is one of the best that we've seen in quite a while. Even the writing escapes the kind of newspaperies that you sometimes get in books of this sort. It's a book that puts you in touch with a major issue in cities today, and he does it in such a humane way that it's just a fabulous book, and you come away from it learning so much and feeling so much, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It was real great. You had him at the store, didn't you? It's a real groundbreaking book in many ways.
Yeah, we did a store event. We did a university event, and we did a fundraiser for Mercy Housing, which provides housing to folks with either financial difficulties or mental difficulties or things like that. He's so wonderful. He's so warm. He's so engaging. And you can see how he got to talk to all these people because he, you can't help but if I had guts to spill, I would spill them to him. And the thing that I love so much about this book, and I hope there'll be more books like this. I mean, there have been in the past, but I, you know, desperately after you finish this book, you just want to read more. And I know that Desmond, I don't remember what it was, might have been New Yorker or something, because a lot of publications are asking authors what their recommendations are for year end. And he mentioned $2 a Day, which I had also read that came out in 2015.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's a very similar setup. It's a very powerful thing about how people have no cash, they have benefits, but they have no discretionary money. But it doesn't have the storytelling. It does not have the story. It's got all the meat, but it doesn't have, he takes it to another level because he's a storyteller and he takes those people and he brings them to life and it's like they're all your best friends. And so when they make mistakes, it's like when your cousin makes a mistake or your child makes a mistake and you say, I'm against that, but I'm okay with you doing it because I understand the circumstances and I know what a great person you are. Mm-hmm. And you understand what great people these people are. And when they make mistakes, you understand and you get beyond that otherness that happens so often in life.
Yeah. And it's my understanding that the book has been making the circles in city halls all over the country in housing departments, isn't it, Nancy?
Yes, in fact, I just was talking to the mayor of Seattle today, Ed Murray, while I was waiting to come on
Eddie
the show.
Murray.
Yeah, he's here for to do one of the programs here, his whole office is reading the
book.
He had read it. Yep, one of his aides or bodyguards. I don't know. He sort of travels with a group of men to protect him. I think. Just talked about how it just. How he felt that we in Seattle needed to collect data so we would have hard facts to back up our vision of what's happening. It was very interesting that he had, that was one of his favorite books of the year.
Yeah. I'm glad it was on both of your lists, even though it really wasn't on your list, Daniel. But
it's on some list.
It's on a lot of lists. it's good to be on everybody's list. We got that for sure. We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many more books to go through, and if we don't get through all of them with Daniel and Nancy, we'll put them with a little description of the book on our Facebook page. Give us a little time after the show because it's just Scotty and me, we're running the show here, so it takes a little while to type it all in. But they have given us a list of their recommendations and are happy to give you recommendations right now. If you're looking for somebody for a holiday gift, you don't get any better than Nancy Pearl and Daniel Golden for recommendations. So here's how you reach us. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is The Ideas Network. Oh, we're having fun with book recommendations, and Daniel Golden and Nancy Pearl have given us their recommendations in a list, which we will put on our Facebook page. And if you want suggestions, they will give you suggestions. News of the World. I had no idea that there was an occupation, I think it should be resurrected, where you go around and tell people the news of the day in a story form, and then they pay you. I like this idea.
Sort of tips. So, you don't know that if you don't do a good job, you might not get. You have to work hard at it.
Okay.
So this is one of those interesting books that has a little backstory for me. This book was originally going to be published in the spring, and I always complain that there's not enough good literary fiction published in the fall. Like, they backload it. I mean, I'm always reading all these books that are coming out in January, February, March, and honestly, for the most part, by the end of the year, everyone's forgotten about them. And so Harper made the decision to move the book to fall. They really, really wanted bookseller recommendations. I think I got an advance copy, a beautiful boxed advance copy, a copy signed to me, and I still didn't read it. And what happened that made me read it is I do these talks around town about books and with a few different people, but mostly with Jane, who does our book club stuff. And Jane kept recommending this book everywhere. And by the end, I was like, I've got to go home and read this book right now. So it is set in the aftermath of the Civil War in Texas. the Confederacy has kind of been run out of government, but the Union hasn't really done a good job of replacing them with order, the way we have seen in contemporary politics this happens, world politics. And so things are pretty lawless. Our protagonist is a veteran of several wars and really is done with that and would like to be, as I mentioned, as we were talking about, the man who reads the news aloud to people. He goes from town to town with newspapers. He has to be very careful because he doesn't want to upset anybody. So one secret for you, if you do have to read the news from town to town, is go get newspapers from really far away, maybe London. But the problem with that might be that if you have a particularly cantankerous crowd who thinks that they're hot stuff, they might get mad because they're not in the news in London. So to his regret, I suppose, a few gentlemen come up to him and say, we have this young girl. She was kidnapped by Native Americans, and we've gotten her back, and she has to go back to her family. And it's so lawless, we have to go all the way to San Antonio, and since we are happen to be black cowboys, we will probably be killed. So will you do this for us? You seem like a good shot, you know. You're old, and maybe people will let you get through. And so this is about the journey from one place to another. It doesn't go well, but it's the thing that's so interesting. It's beautifully written. Oh. And I love short novels. I love language books and I love short books. If a book is beautiful language for 800 pages, it can be a little exhausting. But at the size of this book, it's just about right. She's done a lot of research, and I believe Paulette Giles, I don't think I've read anything since Enemy Women, is that it? She has, she knows this territory. She's written a lot about Texas. And but I think Jane told me, who's read a number of the books, that this is the best she's ever done.
Mm. So. Mm. Oh, you convinced me on that one. Nancy, have you heard of that one?
Yes.
You've heard of everything, yeah. Of course.
No. I had the same experience as Daniel with the
really?
Advanced reading copy and then the signed copy. But I was a huge Paulette Giles fan, because the book that I read that actually shares some of the characters with News of the World is The Color of Lightning. And it is also about children kidnapped by Native Americans and what their lives are like. But The Color of Lightning is a bigger book. I think what Daniel said about the size of News of the World and the gorgeous writing, I would absolutely agree. Mm. But I would read The Color of Lightning first, actually, because there you get to meet the hero of this book. Back when he was younger, in his younger days.
It's a fascinating, we are a social experiment as to whether you have to read the book beforehand or not. I try that with mysteries sometimes. Like, I'll dig into, like, book number 10. It's like, am I lost? Am I not lost?
Right. Yes.
That's funny. One more from you, Nancy, and then we'll go, all our phone lines are going. I'm so glad, and you introduced me to her years ago with Destiny of the Republic, a book that remains. I'd love that book, and I've recommended it to so many book clubs, and everybody has loved that book. And Candace Millard, who was with us recently because she has a new book about Winston Churchill and, of all things, the Boer War. But she is a heck of a writer. She just she knows the history, and she can write it up so you really are involved.
Yeah, I think she's probably one of our best public historians.
Yeah.
There are a couple people that it's very hard to It's almost unimaginable to write a boring book about Winston Churchill, say, or Theodore Roosevelt, because they had such fascinating lives and they were such complex, interesting people. This is the story of a young Winston Churchill in his early 20s who goes to South Africa to take part in one way or another with the Boer War. And I spoke about this book to a group of people, and I said, most Americans, or I guess I didn't even say most, I said Americans tend not to know much about the Boer War. And somebody interrupted me and said, That's not true. I wrote my thesis on the Boer War.
Really?
So I stopped saying that. But
it's Candace okay. You can still say it. I think most people don't know about it.
I know. But it was a fascinating. It was a horrifying war. It was, and Winston Churchill took part in it. And one of the side stories that I think is that came out of it for me was that. The British built prison camps for the Boers that they captured, and they put them in these horrible camps and treated them atrociously. And during World War II, someone asked Goring how he came up with the idea of these camps where they were sending 6 million Jews and gypsies and homosexuals. And he said, to this British questioner, he said, "Oh, we learned it from you in the Boer War." Mm. So it's a bigger, you know, it's a bigger question. It's a big subject, and I think that Candace Millard made a wise decision to not tell the whole story, but to focus in on Winston Churchill. And you get this great, you know, Winston Churchill, his ambition, it was outsize, I think would be fair to say.
Absolutely. And you think about how young she is and accomplished at this point in her life, what
yes.
she's going to give us in terms of important history that a lot of people will read. She's got many, many books still to come. It's a good thing.
Yes, definitely.
Let's go to phone calls. Jill in New Berlin joining both of you. Daniel Golden and Nancy Pearl, our guests this hour. Hi, Jill. Jill, are you there? What in the world? Why am I not hearing anything here? Hello, Jill. Well, call us back. I'm sorry. Let's go to Gil in Madison. Hi, Gil.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether it was Jill or Gil.
It's Gil now. Jill is gone, Gil.
Whether I should connect or not.
Go ahead.
This would change the discussion from what you're into, but I mean, a book that I've read this year by Jhumpa Lahiri, who I'm sure your guests know of, but this is one that she's written just recently that focuses on actually on the process of learning a language and living a language. It's called In Other Words, and it's not really a novel, although it does include a short story she wrote, but it's about Jhumpa Lahiri, who goes to Italy and focuses on learning Italian. And the book is written and published in a way that you can read alternate pages in Italian and in English, which I have really appreciated, mainly because I'm married to an Italian and visit my Italian relatives regularly, and I need to keep up on my Italian. But it really is a story of how to learn a language and write in it at the same time. And I just found it fascinating and enriching. And it comes from an author who has achieved some acclaim, The Namesake is another one that she's written, and I'm waiting for your guest to chime in here.
All right, and I'm sorry, I missed the author, Gil. Who wrote it?
Jhumpa Lahiri.
Okay. Daniel?
I didn't read it, but I've read Interpreter Maladies and The Namesake, but we have Caroline, one of our booksellers, has it on her staff rack shelf. Maybe Nancy read it.
Nancy, have you?
I did not read it. I'm probably less of a Jhumpa Lahiri fan than most people. But I thought the idea of this was fascinating, mm-hmm. about falling in love with a language and wanting to live in that language. And I don't know why I didn't even pick it up to start reading it.
Oh, I ran out of time.
Okay.
You've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of books. I will say I met her many, many years ago.
Really?
And I completely destroyed the idea of having an intellectual or literary conversation is this the sister? I think it was probably 13, 14 years ago, and we talked about Jell-O 1-2-3, that old packaged dessert that would separate into the three layers. Because they served, we were at a fancy restaurant, and they served us something that was like it. That's all I could think about. So that's all I got.
Jell-O 1-2-3, time to bring that back, too. That sounds good. Thank you so much, Gil, for your call. The Michael Lewis book, which I got from your store, Daniel, for... I shouldn't say it on the radio. He's not listening. He's out of town. For my son. He's a big Michael Lewis fan. And I must say that I am, too. This is kind of... Michael Lewis does a lot of different kinds of books. He's on your list. It's really getting a lot of attention right now. A lot of people are buying this book.
We've been having good sales on books. But, boy, last week that we just had a complete explosion
Wow.
of demand in the first week. I mean, there's never too many books that come out after Michael Chabon's book came out after, later in November, but not too much. You know, it's really after about the 1st of November, you have to kind of wait until December 27th to see a bunch of new releases. And I don't know why more people don't do it because, boy, I think it's hard to turn it around. The logistics are tough and that kind of thing. But we ran out like sometime on Saturday. We have more now. But we ran out sometime on Saturday, and I just couldn't help it. I had to pick it. Well, first of all, I thought, I'm going on the show. I'm like, what would Kathleen Dunn read?
Nonfiction. I know that. Nonfiction.
And so I actually bought a copy. I'm doing that thing, and I know those people aren't listening. I'm doing that thing where I bought the book. And because there were no advance. They don't need me. They don't need me as a bookseller to read this book. But I wanted to read it anyway. I think I read his last book in 2009. It was the least read Michael Lewis book in history, his book about becoming a father. But this is sort of starts out, at least, because I'm in the middle of it now. And it starts out almost as a sequel to Moneyball. Because he talks about stats and sports and how basically the thesis of this book is that is not everything, and then becomes a book about behavioral psychology, focusing on Tversky and Kahneman, Kahneman's famous for thinking fast and slow, why that is so important in decision making. He's got a great style. It's definitely, they look, he's at the equal of Malcolm Gladwell, they have a Malcolm Gladwell-esque feeling to it. It's the white book with the icon in the middle, in this case, an eraser, and pencil shavings, which I kept thinking was dust on the book, and I kept trying to brush it away. I'm like, oh no, that's really the cover. And then I fell for it again the next day.
The reviews I've read, and I haven't read it yet, talk about the friendship between these two, and this real almost love between the two of them. And I'm interested in reading the book for that reason, to read about them, that they could finish each other's, their minds were so similar, they were thinking each other's thoughts.
I love friendship novels. It's out of, I can't mention books that are out of print. Ah, what the heck.
Nancy will bring them back for you.
Yeah. Right. There's I love math books, as I've mentioned before, and there's a book that I really love called The Man Who Loved Only Numbers, and it was about Paul Erdős and how he was the most collaborative, friendly mathematician in history. He had no home. He just traveled to other mathematicians' houses and solved problems with them. And every mathematician judges. And he's one of those stories that comes, I'll read about it in other books. It's just the story that keeps on going, even though you can't get this original book that a lot of the source material is from. And that when I think about a friendship book, a book about, people creating things through each other, I love that too.
So. Yeah. And the one that I think it was on one of your lists somewhere, Nancy, but I know that you recommended this book, and we just interviewed her a couple of weeks ago, is Blanche Weisenkook's book, the volume 3 on Eleanor Roosevelt. Yes. I loved that book.
Yeah. I thought of putting that on my list. But then I thought you really have to do it as a set, or consider the three volumes as one big volume. But oh my gosh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is for anyone interested in women's studies, in a portrait of a fascinating woman and her life, her whole life. Nothing can beat these biographies.
Yeah, they're wonderful. Jeremiah in Cornell is next. Hi, Jeremiah.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I had a question. I'm looking for a new author to start reading. I primarily read Margaret Weis, Tracy Hickman, Terry Goodkind, K.J. Parker. And I was wondering if you guys might have a suggestion.
Have you read Emma Bull?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so she has a wonderful book, which I keep waiting for her to do the sequel, but it's been so many years, I don't know. It's called Territory, and it's a kind of magic take on Wyatt Earp, who turns out to be a wizard, a bad wizard. But it's about that period. So it does what I like best, which is mix reality and real history with a tinge of magic in it. So is that not fantasy enough? Because I know...
Does it sound good?
I guess I generally prefer just more of the straight fantasy, more of a disconnect.
Right.
It helps me unwind, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, you didn't mention it, so I'm just... I'm going to do one obvious. I'm only going to mention Wisconsinites in this segment.
Thank you.
Being very loyal to the state. I assume you've read Patrick Rothfuss, who's just exploded because they ended the movie stuff.
Actually, I haven't.
Oh, no. There you go.
Yeah. Listen, forget Emma Bull till you finish Patrick Rothfuss. Yeah.
And by who should he read? What book?
It's one series.
Oh, one series.
It's a series.
Yeah.
Well, is the third one coming out, Daniel?
Yes, it is someday.
Someday.
No, it's on their schedule. He's supposedly working on it. Maybe with this new announcement of the they're going to do, I think, a television adaptation.
Oh.
And so I think he's going to sort of like George R. R. Martin. He might get a little of the fire under him. In terms of Sleeper, there's another author from Racine who has just he's written one series and he has a second one. His name is Brad Bollier. These are pure fantasy, just the way you like it. But what they do, they have little twists on them. So, for example, one of his series is inspired by Russian folklore.
Hmm.
So that's and that's not to say it's set in the world of Russian folklore. It's just like a lot of fantasy series actually use elements of folk tales and fairy tales and stuff in them.
There you go. Thanks very much, Jeremiah. Tony in Madison called in just to say that all he wants for Christmas is to hear Nancy and Daniel on the radio every week. He really appreciates your knowledge and your recommendations. That's nice, isn't it?
That would be heaven.
Yeah, it would be for me, too. For me, too. I agree. Susan is next in Ashland. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Susan.
Hi. Love your show.
Thanks, Susan.
Hey, I stumbled a really cool book last summer. It's called The Treasure of Nemacogin. And if you've ever been to northern Wisconsin, you'll know that we have a big Nemacogin Lake.
Yep, I've been there.
And a Nemacogin River.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had a chief Nemacogin that had a silver mine.
Hmm.
It was a secret. And this is based on true story. But it's a novel, historical novel, I guess you call it. But very interesting about this man who would walk to Ashland from Lake Nemacogin and bring his pockets full of silver and exchange them for money. And he lived up there, and the mine is a secret still. No one has found it.
Hmm.
But the main part of the book, or at least the first book, is the logging. It's all about logging.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has done his research, and it's so interesting as to what the logging camps were like and how they did it. And there's a logging war, and there's a young man, a young boy who comes up from Chicago and starts a life up there and gets into this logging war.
Hmm.
And it's really great fun. It would be, actually, I would say, even... young people as young as maybe 12.
All right, so it's Treasure of Nemacogin. Is that the name of it?
The Treasure of Nemacogin. Then there's two books that follow it.
All right, we'll have to get to those because we don't have much time here, but let's get one. So it's The Treasure of Nemacogin, and there are two others that follow that, and it's a beautiful part of the state as well. Thanks so much, Susan, for your call. Mia in Mequon. Hi, Mia.
Hi.
Oh, hi, Mia. Hi. How are you?
Good.
We were wondering if our whole class that's calling from Mequon could say a quick hello.
Where are you from?
We're from Oreo Lane Elementary School.
Oh, you're listening to the show?
We are. We heard that you guys were talking about holiday books, so I have some kindergartners who want to say hi. Ready?
I have a great suggestion.
Oh, good, Nancy. I'm glad.
Yes. It's called The Christmas Crocodile.
Ooh.
And it's by two of my favorite people. One is a Seattle writer of children's books named Bonnie Becker. She did the story in this book. And it's illustrated by, I would say, one of the top five illustrators of children's books, David Small. And it is back in print. I wrote an introduction to it, and it is absolutely wonderful. It's about a little girl who gets a crocodile for Christmas, and this crocodile does not mean to be disruptive and do naughty things, but you know crocodiles.
Yeah, I've known a few in my time. Great. Did you got that, Mia? That's good. It's good for your class. A suggestion.
Mia, does that sound like a good book for you, The Christmas Crocodile?
I want the Christmas Crocodile. I want
to know Christmas Crocodile. Girls and boys, if you'd like the Christmas Crocodile, raise your hand.
It's great.
Yeah, I'd like you to know that we have a whole class full of hands raised, and thank you very much.
Nice.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, keep that image. That's good. There's a good holiday image for you to have, Nancy. I like that one. Yeah, that's great. We haven't concentrated, and we will on future shows concentrate on children's books, but that was great. All right, let's get back to your list. Where are we? Whose turn is it? Whose turn is it? Well, raise your hand.
I had a question for Nancy, and okay. It's a little off the list, but we were talking about the Namenkaken book, and I wondered, you know, Wisconsin has a storied literary history of a novel set here, and there are so many. I'm wondering if you have a favorite book set in Wisconsin.
One of the books that comes to mind is The Dive from
Clausen's Pier.
Clausen's Pier, Ann Packer's book, which is set in Wisconsin. And I've never forgotten that book. And we talked about beautifully written books. I think The Dive from Clausen's Pier is one of those books that's just just has wonderful, wonderful prose. But it's one of the best books for book groups that I have ever encountered. Yes.
Oh, good.
I mean, it really raises an interesting problem of how much we owe the people we love and the people that we think we love. And how much do you owe yourself?
Oh,
it's a fabulous novel.
Wow. Yeah, The Dive from Clausen's Pier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. How do both of you remember? Because I'm sorry, I read a lot of books, and I got to tell you, I can't remember all of them. And both of you, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, The Dive from Clausen's Pier. Oh, yeah, this fantasy that came. How do you keep all of this in your head, Nancy?
Because I remember nothing else.
That's exactly my answer.
Really? Really? Yes. Yeah.
All right. And that's true for you, Daniel.
Yeah. I have to say, the one thing that happened with the bookstore is that I had to be much better. I wasn't good with people's names. And so now I have to be much better with names. I'm still terrible, but I'm better. And my rule of thumb is if you don't come into the store once a month, I have the right to forget who you are.
All right.
But
but
if you come in regularly, eventually I have to know you, I have to talk to you, I have to say your name, because it's really, you know, obviously people can buy books anywhere, and I understand that. And all we've got is the connection, you know, either that we happen to find a good book for them, or we happen to be doing a nice thing for them, or something like that. And so that's sort of what adds to it. I think that's true for any retail.
Well, you've got a lot of connections too. Sally sends this message on Facebook. My dad is 90 years old. One of the memories that he shares with us is traveling the entire Route 66. I'm wondering if there's a book that you could recommend that covers Route 66, preferably with a lot of pictures.
Oh, there have been a number over the years.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have one in mind? I have to say that I don't even know if they're in print, though.
That's exactly you took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was going to say. That there is, I seem to remember there was a book just simply called Route 66 with a lot of pictures, but I don't believe it's in print any longer. But I would do some Googling of that, actually, and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a wonderful present for him, by golly. Or she could take a trip along Route 66 and take some pictures and give a book to him of her trip down Route 66. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
Yeah. Or take him on the trip as well. Yeah. Mia, thanks very much for the call. Mary in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'll give an example. I read Madame Bovary,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have any maps here. And I was wondering if there's a book on classical books that just deals with, the setting map-wise, you know, like the rivers and the hills and the mountains and all that.
Of where?
Well, you know, any good classic, like Thomas Hardy.
I know exactly what she means.
Okay,
so
good.
So what she's talking about is she would like a book that would lay out maps of all the of classic literature, like the places.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I want that book. Well, don't you want that book?
Yeah,
wait, there is.
Yeah.
Wait.
There is one.
There's something on our new book table, and I can't remember what it's called. Do you remember what it's called?
I mean, Boswell's is on my list of places I have to come visit. But
you'd love it. Yeah.
But by then you'll have changed the table.
That's so true.
The trouble is that. Thomas Hardy did, for example, did base his books. I mean, there was a real place and a real landscape, the setting. But the specifics of it, I think, are perhaps more invented. So I'm not sure.
But there are a lot of books. You know, remember when you would get the wonderful end papers with the map of whatever?
Yes. Oh, right.
You hardly ever see that anymore. But when you see
Except in fantasy.
Yeah,
you
that's
still
true.
See it in fantasy.
Well, it's a book that needs to be written, it looks like, Mary. And we thank you very much for the call.
If I find that book on the table, I'll email it to you guys.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
And I just hung up on Mary.
Good.
But so hear
good.
That, Mary. So if Daniel finds it, call Scotty and let him know what your email is, or we'll just put it on our Facebook. Oh, we'll put it on our Facebook page. We'll get in touch so that the information will be there. What's that, Daniel?
It's how we say route. I don't know if you caught this in the last one. Some of us said route and some of us said route. And this is this is my favorite gift book of the year.
Oh,
it's called Speaking American.
I noticed that.
And it's infographic maps of language. And here's the difference on how we say route versus route. It's almost all route, but there's the Northeast says route, and then parts of the Southwest say route.
Oh, I never even thought about that. What do you say?
Wow.
Oh, I say route. I grew up in New York.
Route. Yeah. You say, Nancy? Route?
I don't remember. I think I said route, but
yeah. Route 66. What did I say? Route? Route.
Somebody will have to play this back.
I don't know what I said. Oh, that's interesting.
It's such a fascinating book.
Yeah.
I like to go through lots of, obviously this is the time of year you can sell these books, but it is, I love language. As I said, I grew up in New York. I went to school in New Hampshire. I travel around. I love these differences. You'd think that everything would be consolidated and we'd all be talking exactly the same. We have national television networks and radio networks and internet, and you know what? And it's
We're not
true.
Talking all the same. I can assure you of that.
Things do change. So, language does change, but there's so many interesting things. Obviously, the one that we always talk about in Wisconsin is the bubbler instead of water fountain.
Right.
Not that you can find a bubbler too often, but the point is, did you know that there's another part of the United States that says bubbler? It's centered in Providence, Rhode Island, and circles around it. We also say another weird Wisconsin thing is we say the country is divided between yard sale and garage sale. And now this is not 100%. This is about penetration. So, it could be 70%. So just because you don't say what other people say doesn't mean that other people don't say it. But Southeast Wisconsin is the only part of the country that has a high penetration of rummage sale.
Huh.
Well,
I don't know. it's kind of like in Detroit, we grew up saying pop, for like root beer.
Oh, sure.
You know, mm-hmm. The Midwest, right. Everybody else says soda.
Yeah. Okay. Well, weirdly enough, this is another weird Southeastern Wisconsin thing. Southeastern Wisconsin is a little island of soda in a sea of pop. that we actually say
we
soda.
Are.
We say
we're
soda. But Chicago says pop. Detroit says pop. Faygo right. is pop. It isn't soda.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Cool.
My good. Side. And what's the name of that one?
It's called Speaking American.
All right. Give me one more, Nancy. Before we...
Everyone Brave is Forgiven by Chris Cleave. Wonderful historical novel about World War II, based on the lives of the author's grandparents. So this brings it full circle since we started with Michael Shaiman and talking about his grandfather. But there are many novels about World War II, some great novels about World War II. This is one I think that does something a little bit different, partly because, or mostly because, Chris Cleave is a terrific writer. Mm-hmm. And I there were parts of this book I had trouble. They were so painful, it was hard for me to read them. And parts of this book that I just that just made me happy in this sea of, mm-hmm. of despair that the Blitz was in World War II and being on the front lines in mm-hmm. World War II.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful
novel.
Oh, thank you both. Thank you both so much. I just love having you on. You're just such good people. I love both of you. You're really great.
Oh,
thank you.
Pshaw.
Well, pshaw is true. Happy holidays.
We love you.
Yeah.
We love you,
thank you so much. We should do this more often. It would be wonderful. Once a month, it'd be hard to do all that reading. But, you know, once a week. But once a month, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we should be doing it. Thank you both.
We should.
Nancy Pearl.
You.
Thanks to Nancy. Thanks to Daniel Golden for being with us in honor of Nancy's number one recommendation. A little moon glow in the background. I used to play this on the piano. I got to start playing the piano again. And I do want to tell you that, just to tell you that we interviewed some of the people who we've mentioned here. Certainly Desmond, the evicted author, we interviewed, and others. And next week we have a children's book on Pete Seeger coming up as well.